Hey guys, how's it going? It's Kat with another episode of Eccentric and Extinct, a podcast about the oddities in the past, present, and future, or at least things that are quirky and fun. Today's episode is probably going to be a bit short since I am currently moving office at my main job and have been doing a lot of demolition and planning on the weekends. I also got bit by the interior design bug and I want to decorate everything. Literally everything. It doesn't help that stores have kind of started putting out their Halloween stuff, and I'm constantly trying to talk myself out of buying an enormous amount of Black Kitty stuff. I mean, I live in a very tiny apartment. I don't think 100 cat plushies is gonna be a smart decision. Anyways, enough with the ramble and cat stuff. Let's get into this week's topic and open the door to see who will join us for this tasty supper of haunts and history. There are a ton of different religions and beliefs that over 7 million people celebrate. These range from your more well-known religions to individual belief systems. One that I know a few things about and celebrated a few events here and there is neo-paganism. Also classified as modern or contemporary paganism, this religion is based from past pagan knowledge, events and rituals from the pre-modern Europe, North Africa, and a few parts of Western Asia, Egypt, and Turkey. Unlike other religions, the term neo-paganism is actually an overarching name for multiple movements or groups that have similar yet different parts of paganism. This would probably make sense, since this modern religion is built from a variety of different countries, groups, and cultures. This would also imply that the beliefs and rituals slash practices are very diverse for this sector. There are a few common elements slash principles though. One such belief would be polytheism, the belief in multiple gods and goddesses. Like legends we know and have learned in school, the pagan religion focuses on gods and goddesses that are related to nature, culture, and parts of the human psychology. The interesting thing about pagan figures is that they are human-like in both appearance and in faults. The difference is that through their experiences, they are viewed as wise, having gained knowledge and understanding with each set of setbacks. Many neo-pagans like the diverse set of gods and goddesses, choosing to celebrate a religion that focuses on a movement that isn't so repressive. Of course, there are a few groups in paganism that celebrate one figure, or some that focus on the metaphysical forms and philosophies instead of their physicality. Another few beliefs that are relatively common is animism and pantheism. Animism is a religious belief that objects, places, and creatures have a certain spiritual essence. This could be animals, rocks, gum, you name it. It could even include words, especially when attached to emotions. Pantheism is a religious belief that all things or reality houses an immanent god. A divine presence can be found in everything. These divine presences can be considered parts of that god or being. So basically, God is the same as the universe. This one is a real doozy of a topic, and I don't quite know how to cover this. If anyone else knows how better to explain this, hit me up on social media. So now that I feel really confused, and my brain is semi-blown, let's talk about how exactly we got into neo-paganism. Well, the origins date back to Europe in the 18th and 19th centuries. Scholars such as Johann Herder and Jacob Grimm were publishing works that talked about the diverse European folk culture in the past, and people grew interested. This romantic movement expanded the interest in Norse mythology and Gaelic literature and poetry. Then you had people interested in learning more about Germanic paganism and Vikings. This would continue, though losing some following, until the early 20th century. Christianity was seeing a decline in North America and Europe. People became interested in alternatives and a choice in religious freedom. It expanded even further in the late 20th century with the rise of Neo-Druidism and Germanic Neo-Paganism. Wicca was given a name and was influenced by the drive for feminism and a female goddess. People wanted options to celebrate and honor in their religious freedom. Followers of Neo-Paganism perform rituals, celebrate different festivals, and perform magic slash witchcraft, depending on which sector or group, of course. One such ritual, though commonly celebrated with Samhain, a Gaelic festival at the end of October, was called Dumb Supper. Now there has been records of Dumb Suppers being performed before Neo-Paganism was developed, so the ritual has connections outside of the religion. And yes, I did say dumb supper. Though this ritual has a very bizarre name, it wasn't about how stupid dinner was, or it wasn't me being just a rebellious teen. Instead, it was a meal that was eaten in complete silence and had a few odd, quirky guidelines to follow. Even weirder was the reason why people performed the ritual in the first place. Ever wondered about the dead? Or wanted to converse with someone who had passed away? Or do you want to predict who your future husband might be? Well, do I have a thing for you? Though, forewarning that like all things, so proceed with caution. Dumb Supper is essentially a less involved seance used to communicate to the spirit world. Like stated earlier, it's generally done on Samhain, since that night is when the veil between our world and the spirit world is more open and weak. Samhain is a celebration of death and resurrection, with an emphasis on remembering loved ones and letting things go to start a new beginning. The history of Dumb Supper is very vague, as you can find many sources that depict how to perform a Dumb Supper, but less how it came to be. People have speculated the legend could lie with the Celts, Ozarks, or some other New Age group. Some even say that it was created from a combination of rituals performed by a variety of neo-paganism individuals. After all, throughout history, we have used food to honor the dead, from Egyptians to the Japanese. Dumb Supper is hugely documented in the southern part of the United States in the 20s, with authors like Daniel Lindsay Thomas and Lucy Blaney Thomas writing on the unique supper. There have been records of past historic suppers, at least 35 rituals being held in the British Isles, and over 100 in the United States. Now, when it comes to guidelines, there isn't an exact definition on how to perform a dumb supper, but a lot of accounts have similar elements. It starts with your guests being guided through the veil, as talked about earlier, so that they can enter the realm of the dead. In this realm, the living are not allowed to speak, so participants are asked to be silent throughout the dinner and not allowed to even write notes to each other. Hence, the dumb in the title, meaning to be mute or silent. The host has to make the dining area sacred, either by casting a magic circle, smudging the area, or other methods. There should be no other sound that creates distraction, though it seems some hosts will play music that they believe will honor the dead. All preparations, including cooking, is to be done backwards, though this seems to be one of those things that some people do and some don't. Anyways, the host will walk backwards and hold their hands behind their back while prepping and preparing everything. The place settings will be positioned in the reverse, including the silverware. This will help the guest to continue entering the spirit realm. Each guest will either bring written notes or pictures of their deceased loved ones. The host will sit each person around the table except the head of the table. That seat is meant to be left open for the called spirits to reside at the table. It is usually recommended to have an open seat for each spirit, but others have used a tea-like candle per each spirit and placed them at the empty seat. The head of the table seat should also be wrapped in black and white cloth, along with the empty dinnerware. So as a guest, you will enter, go through the veil, be silent for the remainder of the time, and as you walk to your seat, you should pass the head of the table and stop to offer a silent prayer to the dead. After that, you take your seat and the supper starts. Once everyone is seated, the guests will join hands and bless the meal placed before them. The host will get up and serve the meal to each guest, starting with oldest to the youngest. The host will start serving desserts first and work their way up to an appetizer or dinner roll, eating the meal backwards. The guests wait until everyone has been served, even the spirit, before eating. After dinner is finished, each guest will take turns going to the head of the table. There, they will burn their notes or photos of their loved ones, using the candle that was set out for their specific spirit. At the end, all guests will join hands once again and offer another silent prayer to the spirits you're honoring. As people are ready to leave, each person will stop at the head of the table, offering a goodbye and making their way out the door. So what exactly is the purpose / result of this dinner event besides honoring the dead? Dumb Supper has been used for many different reasons throughout history. It is even still performed today, with a rather large one occurring in Salem, Massachusetts, each Halloween. This year, it's on October 27th at the Hawthorne Hotel, though sadly, it's already sold out. The Salem example is used to call forth spirits with claims of previous guests experiencing certain scents, feeling touched, soft whispered voices, and even apparitions showing up to the dinner. Yet there is another side to this classic ritual that I've hinted at prior before. In the British Isles and the United States, this spiritual supper was used to find love. Including other love rituals, young women were following each guideline in hopes to call forth their future husband's spirit. These young women would hold the dumb suppers in abandoned or decaying houses. An example of such dinner was recorded by Paul B. Fraser in an article called The Dumb Supper, founded in a Midwest folklore journal. He described two teenage girls in the rural part of Kentucky prepping a supper backwards in every respect. The table was set backwards, the chairs were turned facing away from the table, and the meal started with dessert instead of an appetizer. The entire meal was to be eaten completely silent. If all participants followed each guideline, then when the clock would strike midnight, the door would open to reveal their future. The girls' future husbands would either arrive as a spirit or, in some cases, arrive in person. The gentleman would sit next to his future bride, and at that point, the teenage girl would know of her future lover. This romantic ritual was used over and over to create a thrilling part of novels, or to bring about memories of long-lost lovers reunited at last. Now, what was the supernatural twist to these dinners, besides, of course, the spiritual future husbands? Well, instead of a fancy gentleman, these participants could be visited by other misfortunes instead. Some accounts have talked about a coffin appearing instead of a handsome face. This meant that the woman wouldn't be marrying, but instead was likely to die. Another account from her author, Paul Fraser, wrote about how the supper even predicted a murder. In Missouri, two young women set up the dumb supper in an abandoned home. When they finished the ritual, the door opened to allow access to a coffin and a young man holding a knife. The coffin moved to rest next to one girl, while the other waited for the gentleman to sit next to her. He dropped the knife as he sat down, and the young girl pocketed the knife. When the dinner was finished, the coffin and the young man left out the door. Time passed, and one day, the young woman met up with the gentleman from the ritual. Falling in love, they married each other. The girl kept the knife with her and decided to present it to her husband one day. Filled with instant hostility, the husband stabbed his wife in the throat and chest until she died. No account of what happened to her friend, though. But why did Fraser write such tales of misfortune when it came to finding love? Probably because people were wary of supernatural rituals and acts. This folktale was probably written as a warning not to perform such witchcraft. Just think about the tale of Bloody Mary and what happened to those that try. Yet most accounts either ended with no visitors or pranking young men that burst into the room or windows to terrify the young woman seeking love and wanting to know their future in a time when whom one married would make or break your life. Some other rituals performed to find love was walking backwards while facing a mirror. Your future husband's face would appear in the reflection. Another is fasting on the night before the Feast of St. Agnes. As you sleep, your dreams would be filled with your future lover. You could also find out your fate by eating a hollowed out egg filled with salt. As you are choking on how gross and filled with sodium from what you just ate, your caring gentleman spirit would arrive, carrying a water in worry of your current state. But as time passed, and Halloween shifted from the macabre and horror to a kid's holiday in the 1950s, dumb supper fell out of style. The shift of focus went from finding love to celebrating and contacting deceased loved ones during Samhain, ancient Celtic festival for the dead, and to ringing the start of winter. So next time you are searching the cards for love, maybe try your hand at a dumb supper and see what arrives at your door. Well, that's it for this week's episode. It was shorter than usual, and I probably would have liked to do it closer to October, but there are so many topics I want to cover for October that I kind of need to start early. Plus, this was something I've never heard about before and found it kind of intriguing. Have you guys ever heard about these rituals before? Rituals aside, let's get into this week's media of the week. I am recommending Undercover Coven Podcast. This podcast goes great with today's topic as they cover everything from macabre to bizarre. I am talking from Wizard of Oz to the Sodder children's disappearance. It's a great bit of dark with a taste of light commentary and banter to ease up on how fucked up the world can be. So if you like learning about everything from cryptids to the paranormal, then check out these two great ladies on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and other platforms. Are you digging the podcast so far, or have constructive criticism that can help me improve the podcast? Then please write a review wherever you are listening so that I can not only keep providing you with great content, but can adapt and change to keep improving. Thanks in advance. Next, if you would like to see visuals, clues, bad puns, other podcast recommendations, and just me being very weird, follow along on my Instagram at eccentric.extinct and on Twitter at eccentricxtinct. Finally, email me at eccentricextinct@gmail.com if you have any topics you'd like me to cover or if there's a podcast you think I should check out for my media of the week. Thanks again for tuning into this week's episode. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Avoid any coffins or knife-wielding gentlemen callers. I bid veil. Source credits for this week's episode are as followed. When Dumb Supper Were a Halloween Love Ritual by Anne Ewbank with Atlas Obscura. Modern Paganism on Wikipedia. The History of the Dumb Supper by Dreamraven Press. A Feast with the Dead, How to Hold a Pagan Dumb Supper for Samhain by Patty Wigginton with Learn Religions. The Dumb Supper Dinner with the Dead by Festival of the Dead. You can find the links to these sources in the episode description or at eccentricextinct.com.